Next, I think you recognize another name in Indian country when you hear the name Mary Louise Defender. When you hear this name back home, it means a lot. It means respect. It means elder. It means active. I'm told lately, another one who's, I think, in her 80s, I'm assuming, still drives around. You go down to the tribal office during the day, you'll find her there. She's very in tune with what's going on with her tribe, and for good reason. But on the other side, when you think about the pageantry of the beauty of our Native American women, Mary Louise certainly was the godmother of that in Indian country. Along with that, you hear the countless stories, as you heard tonight, the history, where we came from. Mary Louise has sure done that through her entire life. So please welcome Mary Louise Defender.
As it is told, there was this family who had this daughter. The daughter was very different from the time she was little. She didn't always go and play with the other children or do the things that children did. She would very often go out by herself and come back to the lodge and be just happy, and either telling her mother or her grandmother what she had seen and what she experienced.
I was born in rural Sioux County on my grandfather See the Bear's land, and I was born on October 14th, 1930. But I still own the land where I was born, which is very important to me. I like that. Yeah. As a child, I had poor eyesight. Seeing other children then were taught how to do like artwork, you know, to do beadwork and to do quill work and all that. But I couldn't do that. But then one of the grandmas said, "Oh, this little one, Takudina Ota Kiksuya," this grandma said, "this one has a good memory. So maybe if she could tell things, well, then that would be good." And it took me a while to realize that these stories were very important. We didn't have electricity, and we usually lived in one or two room houses where people were lying here on the floor, some on beds, and somebody would start telling a story. So that's the way I first heard stories. One of the things about our stories is that they teach you to think. It's like, you know, now you see something in a book or maybe on TV, and it just hits you in the face and you don't bother to really think about it. But when you're told one of these stories, you think about it. We heard these stories all of our lives, some of us, those who lived it the way we lived and who had the language. And we would talk about them amongst ourselves, those of us who grew up that way. And to be telling these stories, it never really registered with me that it was an art form. I still kind of have my doubts it's an art form. But anyway, there it was. Nominated to be in the traditional art area, and received an award from the National Endowment of the Arts. That was just amazing. To us, Aboriginal Native people, we didn't have history books as such, where someone wrote in words as we know writing today, but the stories, again, are important to us. The accounts of the people, and then the ones that are just told as stories, you know, like you have fairy tales that the non-native people tell. And really, I could never in my whole life figure out what was so good about Gretel shoving that poor witch into the oven. I didn't think that said too much about how we're supposed to behave. But we didn't have stories like that. Those weren't, although sometimes, you know, the Spider-Man, who was us in our primitive state, he did some pretty rank things, but still, you know, we learned from that. But the history that is involved in the in our Wichoyake, the accounts of the people are very, very important, because Oyatekahyaunkumpi, the people always said that you have to live like people should live, and those were the ways that they taught us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Louise Defender.
Omitakuyapi, dehtayetukidina, mayu onihamcha, iomakpi, naha, dechumpikidina, wopi de tanka, eewich hawakia. My relatives to be honored tonight makes me very, very happy. Wana, waniet otum kihuni pantash, ohina, det ka makachan kehichit webeduksha, echinket unganana makesa. Sometimes when you get older, you know, you think you have all these thoughts and you think, oh gee, that's not right. It's just because I'm old, I'm doing this. But then something like this happens and oh, you think, gee, I'm all right yet, you know. Unda kota pichanke takuish hawayampi ki ohina hina iewichamuki api. You know, like the famous writer Ella Deloria said, kinship was kind of the basis of our culture. And for us, we have all kinds of ways of having good relatives. And I like to acknowledge some of those relatives who are here. On my father's side, I have Hidatsa blood. And I can't remember for sure if that's the way it was, but there's two lovely ladies sitting over there, Tilly and Reva Walker. And in our way, I think we were both born for the low clan of the Hidatsas. So then I'm related to those ladies that way. And then somewhere way up there in the audience is a blood relative of mine on my father's side. My grandfather and her mother were brother and sister. And my Aunt Teresa Martin is somewhere up there. And you know, she reached 100 years and she's still going too. So I think the fact that, you know, in this particular category, you honored two of us, and it's interesting. We're balanced, both born in 1930, and fine gentlemen. I'm just happy, and I've known Mr. Jerome for a long time. You know, there's been many wonderful things tonight, and I wanted to acknowledge that, you know, that when they brought out Mr. Dorgan and the fact that they're honoring World War I veterans, I looked at the list right away, again, thinking, you know, we think of our relatives. So I thought, I wonder if my Uncle George Santee is on there. Now, I'm not sure how I'm related to George Santee, but he was always my uncle. And then my blood relative, Paul Goodiron. Now, he, I think, is the great-great-grandfather of Paul, Nathan Paul Goodiron, and also then of the one who was killed in Afghanistan. But he was in World War I. We used to have pictures of him in his doughboy uniform. And then the other one, she was like a relative of my mother, although, you know, very often you have people that you don't know if you're related or not. Annie Skye. And Annie Skye was a Murphy. And James Murphy should be on that, and he is on the list. So I was glad to see three relatives on that list. And then we must talk about the cowboys. You know, I didn't have much chance to be around or develop that side of myself. Although I think for maybe Mr. Fredericks knows and some of you others know that my father is both in the North Dakota Cowboy Hall of Fame and the South Dakota Hall of Fame. But when I was born in 1930, you know, times were hard, it was a drought, and somebody told my grandfather, see the bear, sheep can get along good, they don't have to have special grasses. So I grew up herding sheep and didn't have time to be around horses, so that's my excuse. And when you think about the different art forms that we live with, and for me, as I said, I never looked on, you know, on telling stories, although somebody told always the two forms of our stories, the legends that are like, you know, Hansel and Gretel, and telling somebody that this Dave Swenson called him up and told him, you know, you're either a genius or a comedian, because where in the world did you find that picture of Hansel and Gretel or doing what they did to the witch, you know? kind of weird, I think. But, you know, that kind of a thing. But in my long life, so grateful for all the things, good things that have happened to me, I developed an appreciation for these legends and these stories, because so many good things that we do as Indian people come from those stories. And I learned to appreciate that when I lived in Arizona and New Mexico. My late husband was a participant in what is called a 9-day Yabiche ceremony. So I always went along. The winter ceremony, they told these stories, and that was part of how those people got healed. And it was always in the language. And I always have, you know, I kind of have feelings about the language. But I was down there on August 14th. It was the 75th anniversary of when the President of the United States issued the order to start recruiting those 30 Navajos who would develop the code. And my nephew here, Mr. Bobtail Bear, he's wearing a medallion, Mijawaji Muecho. And on there it says my husband's name, Original 29, Navajo Code Talkers. And that's what was given to us there. And when we think of the language, we're always persecuted about our language. And I guess for right now, people say that get involved. I think Mr. Davis made reference to that, always getting involved in what's going on the reservation. Sometimes that kind of leads to things maybe that aren't the way people want it to be. But, you know, our language has always been persecuted. And my friend sitting over there, she and I tell all kinds of stories, and if we had time, I could tell you some of them. But anyway, they're interesting in our language, very expressive. But on the reservation, we're still going to, I think, go some last effort on that to make sure that the fluent speakers of the reservation are the ones who are teaching our children how to tell stories, how to talk our language, because there's beautiful expressions, and we have to learn to do that. And again, I want to thank the committee for honoring me like this. It's something I was not expecting, but I'm very, very happy about it. Pidamayapi.
Thank you again, Mary Louise. And I want to recognize her sister, Patty Kelly. Patty, you want to stand up too, please? I know your sister, very active in our community back home. Patty, thank you for being here. Yeah, quite the story here. Again, you've seen a trend here of 80 years young and still going, still active, still know what's going on, and a lot to share. So thank you very much for that. Switching gears, switching categories, here we are with another big word in any country, and you talk about leadership. You know, in our world, leadership means a lot. It means political, it means activism, it means grassroots. There's a lot of definitions of what leadership means. But I think that the thing that resonates with I and maybe with you folks is when you're willing to put yourself out there. And you heard some of the political leaders, the former leaders here that are on council, and people have put themselves out there. And why can't I call standing in the gap? Recognizing that you're going to probably go into a fire of some sort. You're probably going to, you know, do you realize what you're getting yourself into? And that's where I see true leaders come about, you know, where they really rise to the occasion. Because I know and I recognize that you can almost feel and sense that there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of stress on themselves and on their families of what they're going through. But yet, for some reason, they're standing there in the gap. They're standing there at fire. Why? Because of one thing, because of our people. Simple as that. And this next gentleman that you're about to see here tonight, Dr. David Gipp, Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, done that for many, many years. So please welcome Dr. David Gipp.
I think Dr. Gipp sees education as the opportunity for American Indian people to grow beyond the confines of a reservation system. A long time ago, reservations were intended to hold back the people. And Dr. Gipp wholeheartedly thinks that education is the one thing that puts us on a sturdy footing, and that's something that can't be taken away.
One of the key things for me was identity of who I was and what I am and what I will become. And that's a challenge for even a lot of young people today, is who they are, what they want to be, and where they want to go.
AHIC is the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. David Gipp was the first executive director of that organization.
He was one of the original founders of AHIC, and that is important because it gives a voice to all of the tribal colleges. So without that one presence, it's like 37 individual voices, but by bringing them all together, you speak to the whole.
Well, in 73, there were only six tribal colleges, officially speaking, and maybe we were serving, if we were lucky, 1,500 students.
Dr. David Gipp just helped promote the tribal college idea and that it was okay to have a separate college just for Native Americans. That was kind of a new idea at that point. I think there was always a bias that somehow tribal people weren't going to be able to go to college. And President Gipp was just one of those people who shattered that whole myth that tribal citizens were not capable of going to college. Absolutely shattered it.
We are, after all, the first Americans. We have paid our place with land and blood. Our status as tribal sovereign nations is specifically recognized in the U.S. Constitution. Our rights as tribal nations to determine our destiny within our great United States should be protected and honored by our government.
We were in a meeting in Washington, D.C., talking to various tribal education leaders about the Higher Education Act, which was then up for reauthorization. President Gipp just said, okay, what do we have to do? Dr. Gipp changed the atmosphere of the meeting from, it can't be done, well, yes, it can be done. That's the kind of leader President Gipp was and still is.
Those challenges continue on. And part of our effort is always to assure that we're providing quality education, quantitatively speaking, and that we are also providing the kinds of things that are important in our case to American Indians.
He was extremely effective in presenting to our congressional delegations the needs of tribal students.
The kind of learning and education that takes place here will continue, and I can't salute highly enough our president, David Gipp, for his leadership, which makes all of this possible.
Thank you, Senator. Pleased so much that you've been able to join us.
Dr. Gipp was making strides for Native Americans at a time when doing anything favorable to tribes was extraordinarily difficult. Dr. Gipp refused to back down in the face of so much adversity. Year after year, he made sure folks in Washington understood how transformational tribal colleges could be and are. And keeping those funds for tribal colleges off the chopping block was his main goal and really his legacy.
He was really good at that. And he wouldn't quit. He was prepared. He knew what he had to do to help them understand what the needs of tribal citizens were.
American Indian students want to know as much about their own culture, their own history, their own languages, and their own practices, whether they're spiritual or religious in nature, even more so among the younger population. So as much as we say we are in a period of cultural or linguistic loss, that may be true. But on the other hand, the tribal colleges stand as a real beacon of not just hope, but actionable kinds of steps to retain and rebuild and what we call, you know, a great renaissance of our own people.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. David Gipp.
Thank you, Scott. I was trying to count in my head how many people have worked for United Tribes or been a student there in the past close to 40 years that I was there. And by gosh, there's quite a few of you, not only in the audience, but all over the place. And I run into students all the time, and it always makes me feel so proud that I've been able to be a part of United Tribes. Scott worked for us for some years as well, as one of his colleagues. Dr. Davis, his father, was our first dean at United Tribes back in, I'm trying to remember which year, 1978 or somewhere in there. They were still youngsters then. But I've just had a tremendous amount of privilege of having worked for United Tribes. Anyway, I want to thank all my relatives and friends that are here tonight, commend our 73 champions. I know all of you and many of your families and the good work that you've done as well and the good things you bring to our people at Standing Rock. Pete and your family, longtime friends, and good to see all of you here tonight in strength. And as well as Mary Louise Defender Wilson, one of our not only tribal advocates, but also one of those who brings the culture, the knowledge, the language, all of those things so relevant to each and every one of us back home. We thank them for their service and their good work and their continued good work. Dan, you have been a great role model for us. I've had good experiences with all of these and so many other people. But this is a making of the people, by and for the people. Many of the founders of the original United Tribes Board were people that probably were lucky to have a seventh or eighth grade education, but they had one thing always there, commitment, and they had great depth of knowledge of who they were and what they were all about. They knew who they were. They knew that they needed to do better. And United Tribes was that place, both in terms of a location, but also politically. We had the support of the late Governor Guy and all of our governors coming forward, as well as many others that joined us, congressmen, senators, and others. And so I had the privilege of working with United Tribes at its very beginning to have earned their trust and been able to lead an organization that became a college. United Tribes was not a college in its very beginning days, and we had to create and mold it into that. Dr. Jim was one of those who helped us do that. There are many stories about United Tribes, and I have to tell you that there were other prototypes back in 1968-69, three of them which never made it, and the fourth, which was United Tribes, became one that stayed. And the reason why it's there yesterday and today is because the tribes of North Dakota, the Indian people of North Dakota, put their faith in it. If they hadn't, it would have failed. And when you look at what United Tribes is about, it's about people, it's about opportunity, it's about taking our own people out of poverty and bringing them back to an age where they can successfully compete and do well among themselves. And that is the epitome of our tribal college movement throughout the United States. Of the 37 tribal colleges and universities that are in North America as well as in Canada, it's the story of our people rising up to become themselves, rising up to become who they are and becoming the enunciation of all that we dream of, both spiritually as well as the other aspects of the good life. Dr. Janot from UND is one of those and where my alma mater is, and he helped create opportunity for Native students as well. One of our great colleagues in this audience right now, we're privileged to have with us, and helped create and work that aspect of creating the Tribal College Community College Act of 1978 is with us. He is the longest standing tribal college university president in the United States of America. Dr. Lionel Bordeaux, are you there? Would you please stand up? My point being is that's a man along with others who are no longer with us. But the point being is he and others walked the halls of Congress, oftentimes being stood up for meetings, oftentimes being told no, that the tribal college law was not destined to be, being called by congressmen that if we created this law, it would be the worst thing that could be done for Indians in America. It would be the worst thing that would be done for legislation for Indian affairs. So we had to go through many, many different doors that were sometimes locked or closed up, and we had to open those doors. But I say this because, you know, our people have struggled long and hard, and they have earned their way where they're at, even today. I know that I served in 1971 in the North Dakota's Constitutional Convention, and one of the reasons why I served in that Constitutional Convention, the second one for North Dakota, was that I believed that we have the right to be citizens and to identify how we create that citizenship within our own rights. And that is the issue of who we are. That's the issue of our own treaties and our own recognitions, as well as serving under our flag, the United States of America, under our flags of our tribal nations, but also the Constitution of the state of North Dakota. And we need to make sure that North Dakotans live up to what their obligation is, their constitutional obligation to us as citizens of the state of North Dakota. We must not forget that we hold that same flag, and we can hold it as we wish and as we will. So don't forget those things. It is a sad legacy that was left this past year in the territory of Standing Rock. It needs to be made good. Our current governor and the governors of the future and the legislators of the future need to do well by the state of North Dakota, by doing well by the people of Standing Rock, who are not only in North Dakota, but in South Dakota as well. So when I look at United Tribes, I know this much. I had both the gratitude and the thanks of many Native people, and I could list so many of them that helped create United Tribes. It was a making of our own. It is time that we continue writing our own history of who we are about. Some of our tribes have already begun to do that and are doing it. The people at Spirit Lake, for example. But we must write and rewrite that history. I look at the history of North Dakota as done by one of our academics out of UND, and while she's a wonderful lady, it doesn't tell the truth or the story of North Dakota Indian people. We must tell our own story. And that's what the story of the tribal colleges is all about. That's the story of who we are and where we're from. We must always remember that because we tell the truth. We tell the insights of what is and what has been. I thank you all on behalf of my family and all of my friends and relatives, and we'll see you. Thank you, Scott, and keep up the good work. Pilama, Pilama Yellow. Thank you very much.
I must say, Dr. Gipp, you haven't skipped a beat. Not at all. Certainly last but not least, another prominent name in the country. When you think of the name and hear the name, Dr. Lee Janot, you think of automatically UND, you think of Grand Forks, you think of Time Out. I mean, you think of, you think of a lot of things. You think of family. But I think of him as a friend. Again, sincerity the heart that he's had for our students and the thousands and thousands of students. At least someday between you and Dr. Gipp, I wonder who's got the most students they've experienced in your tenureship. It'd be interesting, the numbers on that too. So, again, Dr. Lee Janot has done a tremendous thing for Indian Country. So please welcome Dr. Lee Janot.
This is a really special day. We're here to celebrate with Lee and to honor him and thank him for all the things he's done throughout the years for students and for Native communities everywhere.
Lee is the strongest advocate for Native American students that we have on our campus. Lee is the epitome of a servant leader. He sees his role helping others be able to help the mission be fulfilled. And as a consequence, he doesn't like the limelight. He prefers to be in the background, but his advocacy and his reputation on campus is tremendous. And when Lee talks, people listen. And he often is in a position not only to advocate for students, but on occasion he is in a position to interpret and help people understand some of the challenges that our Native American students have when they come to a university like this. He was a teacher for all of us in helping us understand how terribly important it was for the center to be able to function for Native American students. And the desires and goals and challenges that they faced. And he was a wonderful teacher at that.
I graduated with my bachelor's in 1972. And consequently, I was awarded a position here at UND as program coordinator.
I came on campus too as a student. And when I was here on campus as a student, of course, the American Indian Center was just a place to go and know that other people were there doing the same thing. And of course, Dr. Janot was always there.
I really got to know Lee when I came to UND as a student in 1987. And I walked into his office, I needed help. I had no idea what I was doing. And he welcomed me with open arms and helped me all the way.
That's what Dr. Janot did for all the American Indian students here on campus that came to campus at UND. Is to be that support service and advocate for them to make sure that they stayed in school. He helped get them to realize that having the education was just as important as all the other things that a lot of kids do when they come to campus. So being here, staying here, getting it done, and once it's done, nobody can take it away from you.
Even today, if you were to ask all of our American Indian students, I would say 80 to 85% of those want to return to the reservation communities. They really have that homing instinct, and I think they have that cultural and that tradition of wanting to help other Indian people.
He's just been a mentor and a person who will do whatever he can for students to succeed.
They never wavered in their belief that I could accomplish my educational goals and dreams. And just when I accomplished one goal, Lee would challenge me to aim for another.
I'm glad the program's going well.
It is, but you made a huge contribution to it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
One of the things a lot of people don't realize is how far Lee would go for Native students.
Dr. Janot has helped me tremendously pretty much throughout my whole undergraduate career. His helped with everything any college student could want, financial support through the center, through the American Indian Student Services, social support, everything.
For somebody to take upon himself to help his extended family, his students, and other Natives is a rarity. And I think that not enough people understand that about him. He gave of his home, of his family, of his person to help others. And most people wouldn't do that.
I've always had the thought that, yes, it's really nice to have a program like we have developed over the years, But again, it's not so much for our institution. It's really for our home tribal communities. And that's one thing that I've really tried to push, not only with our administration, our faculty and staff, to really strengthen and work with tribal communities.
His legacy is one that will, for generations, be felt. Probably none of us are indispensable, but there are some who come very close. And Dr. Janot is one of them.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Lee Janot.
Let me just tell you, for the talk that Dr. Giff just gave, he said it was short. This morning, I made a presentation to the Higher Education Research Organization for Students, a HEROES group. It's a higher ed group, mainly for American Indian people and support service personnel. At any rate, I was talking to a good friend of mine, Mr. Hunter from Fort Berthold, and he said, you're on the agenda for an hour and 15 minutes. He said, yeah, I said, and I'm kind of prepared and all of that. And then he says, well, if you can do that, he said, you might as well run for council. So, you know, let me tell you, I am so humbled for this honorable recognition. It's something one really never thinks about or whatever. I just retired in June, and let me tell you, it's really been a huge transition for me. It's, you know, I don't really miss the work, but let me tell you, I miss my family that I worked with, my coworkers, and especially the students. And I just want to thank all of you for having the trust in our institution, the University of North Dakota, to send your children. Let me tell you, what are the keys? And yes, this recognition is nice, but you don't get there on your own. Number one, the creator always has to be there. But with that, you really have to have a competent staff. And I've been so fortunate to have excellent people work for me, committed. They would bend over backwards for students. I myself have gone to court with students, bailed students out of jail. Their parents couldn't be there. I've done just a host of things over the year. And my concern was, I want to get them back in the classroom, okay? They're not going to learn much sitting in jail for a few days and that sort of thing. So I've really tried to bend over backwards to really help the American Indian students. UND, I've worked there for 43 years. Again, have all my degrees from there. And it's an institution that I dearly love. It's been difficult at times. I know that we've had this controversy on the name issue. That's probably the worst thing that I've had to deal with, because every time there was an incident on campus, it came directly to our office, and we had to, you know, do some things with it, whatever. You know, I'm not going to get into any of that. But at the same time, that truly was a horrendous issue. Not only for us, but the entire state got involved with that particular problem. The joyous time that I've had is at the end of the school year, we have basically three graduations on our campus. Seeing the American Indian students walk across that stage, it just makes your heart. And seeing the proud parents, it's just unbelievable. And over my 43 years, I've probably only missed a handful of the graduations. So work with those students, be there for them. And I'd just like to say that our institution is a grand institution. Trust in the University of North Dakota. My guess is that if the students utilize the services, they're almost certain to graduate. You know, in thinking back when I first started at the University of North Dakota, there were basically three individuals that were there. individual that worked for the Indians into Medicine program, just getting that start. There was Art Raymond, who really was asked to try and develop a Indian Studies program. And of course, I wasn't the first director. We had an individual by the name of Flo Wigger. I think she worked in the program for about a year. But one of the unique things is we were one of the only programs, American Indian programs, in the state of North Dakota that was legislatively approved. And as a result of that, we had the academic program, the development of the Indian Studies program, and then the component, which was the support service program, the program that I was involved. We were so happy with that funding. But let me tell you, we had one director and a quarter-time secretary. So over the years, it really took a lot of justification for the needs for the American Indian students. The presidents that I've worked with, one of the things that they would always say is, we have to treat all students equal, okay? And quite honestly, I really didn't buy that. I've always had the attitude that no, that's not the case. They need additional services. Our American Indian students are at this level. All we want to do is provide adequate services to get them at that level playing field with other students. And I think over the years, in starting with just the Indian Studies program, the MED program, and our program, at that time, it was called Native American Programs, and then we changed it to American Indian Student Services. But at that time, there were only three American Indians on our campus, and we didn't really have that many American Indian students. I would say probably 40, 50 students. And over the years, you know, that's grown considerably. You know, in terms of Indian programs, we're scratching the surface on three programs. And then over that 43 years of working with highly committed administrators, numerous presidents, of course, our area was in the student service area or student affairs. We grew from like three programs to at one time having well over 30 initiatives on campus. Way back when I first started, what you saw in American Indian students was they were majoring in positions and careers that they would get employment on the reservation. That was like social work, education, becoming a teacher, maybe like an assistant or something in nursing at that particular time. But that was pretty much the limit. We just didn't delve into that. And goodness sakes, over the years, I've just seen a dramatic change. Goodness sakes. We have trained attorneys at our institution, medical professionals. In fact, one of our programs, the Indians into Medicine program, contributes to about a third of the American Indian physicians, and that comes from our institution throughout the United States. You know, that's really remarkable. We've had a nursing program, a RAIN program, and goodness sakes, I would say that they've nearly saturated every IHS facility in North Dakota with nurses. We've also had library training. We've had counselor training programs through federal grants. We've had numerous science initiatives. We've had educational leadership programs. Okay, so consequently, we have individuals that graduated from our institution that are now superintendents. In fact, I think the five tribal college presidents here in North Dakota are graduates of our institution. With that being said, you know, again, I'm just very, very humbled for this opportunity. College has changed drastically from when I first started college. When I first started, we had one individual. There were no tribal scholarship programs. We had an individual, her name was Mary Mitchell in Aberdeen, and would visit all the colleges where American Indian students attended and provided funding for all of those in the Aberdeen area. She was able to do that because there were very few American Indian students in college, just very few at that time. I started at Lake Region Junior College, and I think there were only like four or five American Indian students that were in attendance at that particular time. But again, the way things have changed, that's all we received was the tribal scholarship. We really didn't have the Pell programs and the financial aid program that they have today. So students are just a whole lot more fortunate. But I can remember paying board room tuition and having $35 left over and making that stretch the entire semester. And we'd have to go up to the comptroller's office and ask them to cut us a $5 check for the weekend, you know, because, and again, you know, money back then was, it went a lot further, but can you imagine that today, after all your financial aid, having $35 to live through that semester? Now, I was fortunate because my mom always sent food back with me, always sent money. What I remember most is that I'd be sitting in class at Devil's Lake at the junior college and, again, taking notes and that sort of thing and turning the page, and there'd be a note of encouragement from my mom. And she did that, all through my undergraduate education. And let me tell you, it really did give motivation. You know, I have so much to thank my parents in terms of what they've done for me and all their children. I also want to recognize my sisters who are here, so supportive over the years. Their husbands, okay, and have really supplied us as kind of a family recruiting thing to UND. I've had so many nieces, nephews, and now we're going to get into their grandchildren and that sort of thing. So it's been really a good run for me at the institution. And again, I just want to make it clear, you don't get there on your own. You really get there from a lot of help from especially a well-qualified staff. And some of my staff members, past staff members, are here today, and I thank you for being here. You know, I'd be remiss if I wouldn't thank my three daughters. Lonnie's in California, and I think she's getting some kind of streamline of this activity, so that'll be nice for her. But my daughters, Sean and Carrie, and relatives on both sides. I really appreciate the Thunderhawk family for being here, and, of course, the Janot family. I'm just so overwhelmed by this and so gracious to you. Scott, thank you so much.
The North Dakota Native American Hall of Honor inductee ceremony was held in the Russell Reed Auditorium at the North Dakota Heritage Museum on September 7, 2017. Nominations for the North Dakota Native American Hall of Honor can be submitted at the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission website at indianaffairs.nd.gov. This program was produced by the United Tribes Technical College Office of Public Information. Dennis Newman, director, Alicia Heglin-Thorpe, producer. This series is designed to provide insight and improve understanding of tribal culture and Native people. For more information, visit our website at uttc.edu.